In Laurie Lynn Drummond's new collection of short stories, anything you say can and will be used against you. Women police officers are as competent as men, but that doesn't mean they're exactly the same. Well, let the author tell us.
Every night when I go home after shift, I run my hands lightly over my body as I undress. The tips of my fingers catch the new scratches on my hands and arms, tiny red vines, an unreadable map. The new welt on my side, unexplainable. The constant steady bruise on the hip bone where my gun caresses the skin a deeper purple day after day. My breasts are sore and tender from the bulletproof vest. I unbraid my hair and shake it loose. One of my fingernails is torn and bleeding. My tongue glides quickly over the rusty sweetness. I taste others' sweat. I stand under the shower, place both hands on the wall, and lean into the water, stretching out the muscles, pulling them long the length of my body. Okay, I tell myself. Every night I tell myself, okay.
That's the voice of an officer who's shot a man. Laurie Lynn Drummond now teaches writing at St. Edward University in Austin, Texas. But before, she was a uniformed officer for 8 years on the Baton Rouge Police Department. That experience suffuses almost all of the stories in this collection. She joins us from the studios of Station KUT in Austin, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Scott.
Part of the absolutely riveting quality of this book is the wealth of details that you get about police work. And I'm not sure I've ever begun an interview on such a gloomy note, but I didn't know until reading this book that police officers had to go through a special cleaning for their uniform to get out the stench of death.
The smell of death permeates the uniform and your hair and your skin incredibly. And so it really needs a special kind of washing. It needs to be washed several times.
Mm-hmm. Buried in the backyard is another procedure, isn't it?
That was something I didn't hear in the training academy. The one in the training academy was stuffing coffee grounds up your nose, which I never met anyone who ever did that. But I had been out on the streets for about a year, and a homicide detective told me that he liked to bury his clothes because it really cut the stench, and then he could wash it in the washing machine at home. And I just, I actually asked around because I figured he was pulling my leg, mm-hmm. but he wasn't. That was one of the tricks that they used.
I'm wondering if you can help us understand the physical force, what you call the taste of that smell.
There is a presence after somebody dies, especially if you have arrived on the scene as they're dying or just after they've died. The air thickens, and the taste of death is, it's a coating. It's like that coating when you haven't brushed your teeth for a long, mm-hmm. long time, and maybe you've been eating some food that hasn't agreed with you. And then you kind of have to times that by about 25. It feels like this fine sheen of sweat. You almost think that you should be able to see the smell and wipe your tongue and see the taste. It is so pervasive and so horrific. And no one can really prepare you for it.
Did you leave to become a writer, or did you just leave?
I left. I left for a couple of reasons. I was getting very burnt out. I had been in uniform patrol for quite some time. I knew I needed to get off the streets. I was losing my compassion. I had a couple of incidents where I almost got injured very badly. And then I got in a wreck on duty, and I was in rehab for 15 months.
You mean a police car wreck?
A police car wreck, yes. I was on duty.
Because there's a story here that centers around a car wreck.
That story is probably one of the two most autobiographical mm-hmm. in the collection. Yes, that's based on my own car accident and an accident I had worked previously where I held a young man's head together.
What I'm guessing here as I'm sitting here talking to you is that you must have sometimes seen things that, in a sense, you could only get through them if you told yourself, well, one day I'm going to make use of this in a story.
Never did that. I've kept a journal since high school, and there's a six-year gap. And those 6 years are when I was with the Baton Rouge City Police. I couldn't write down, I could not process what I was seeing and experiencing. The only way for me to keep going back day after day was to try not to think about it as much as possible, was to lock it away.
I think one of my favorite stories among this 10 is called Something About a Scar. And I hope you don't mind me giving away the ending. There is no ending to give away.
No, in a sense,
a woman who was assaulted at one point, who cannot successfully prove that she was attacked. I don't want to say nothing happens, because that's hardly the case. It's a uh-huh. gripping story, but there's narrative drive and yet no resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder, is that what a lot of police work is?
Yes. You're working on some hunches and you hope that you're right. But often cases go nowhere. They're never solved, or they remain this mystery of, was she actually stabbed and assaulted, or did she do that to herself? That is much more typical than you arrest the person and they're convicted and put away for life.
When you were a police officer, for that matter, after you left and became a professor of literature, did you read many police procedurals, what's called cop fiction, crime stories, any of those things?
I read a lot when I was on the police department. I read Joseph Wamba. I liked Sarah Paretsky a lot. I read Elmore Leonard. But nobody was doing anything about female police officers in the realm of dailiness of life. It was always a little over the edge. It was a little too Hollywoodish.
Well, what are some of the things that police or detective fiction most commonly get wrong, in your view?
I've never seen anything that addressed the difficulty of wearing a bulletproof vest for a woman. Yeah. I've never seen anything that addressed the difficulty of menstrual cramps when you're wearing 15 pounds of gun belt around your hips. I've never really seen anything that's dealt with the difficulty of being a single mom and a police officer, or married with a child and a police officer, or the difficulty of a married couple, both who are police officers, and dealt with it in an honest and realistic way.
I guess I wonder, once you've been a police officer, no matter how much you found parts of it impossible to go on with, I wonder if anything is ever quite so totally engaging again.
I miss police work sometimes. I miss the camaraderie. I've never had anything like that before or since. Mm. I miss the adrenaline of calls. I miss the access to that kind of information. I think that nothing will come close again to the exquisite sweetness of helping other human beings in life and death situations.
You know, when I read your description of some of this, Laurie, I think I understood better why a police officer at the scene of a crime would feel like they had been personally charged with finding out what happened and who did it.
So many of the officers I've talked to have mentioned that they appreciated, in my book I talked about this moment of honoring, this moment where you look at the person dead and honor who they were and what they went through mm-hmm. in their death. And I've had officers say, I do that, even if it's for a second or for 3 seconds, I do that. And it's, you never forget. I remember every single suicide, fatality, homicide, any of those that I have worked. You never forget them. You never forget their faces or where they were located. They become the people you carry with you in your heart.
Laurie Lynn Drummond, her new collection of stories, her first, Is Anything You Say Can and Will Be Used Against You, published by HarperCollins. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Scott.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.